welcome to this week's, well, I guess it's kind of fortnight's...
Fortnightly, semi-fortnightly...
Randomly, slightly
on
randomly...
Occasion.
Yeah, slightly random podcast.
Welcome.
Not just a game. I am Catherine Flick.
And I'm Tia Fothergill.
And this week we want to talk to you about our very first experiences with gaming.
Yes.
So we've been gaming since, well, I've been gaming since I worked out, probably about 1984.
Yeah, probably.
Actually, no, it must have been about 1985.
I was going to say, probably a little later for me.
Yeah, 1985. So my dad, in 1985, mm-hmm. he bought a PC, one of the first IBM-compatible PCs, which was made by NEC at the time.
Wow.
And it was a Pentium... No, it wasn't even a Pentium.
It was a
80, I can't remember, but really, really, really old IBM PC compatible. And I was a.
It was new then.
286.
And it was
amazing.
It was a 286.
Yeah, and it was so expensive that as part of the sweetener to buy this ridiculously expensive machine, I think it was in Australian dollars, around about $8,000 or $9,000 or something. He got a VCR.
Mm-hmm.
With the PC for free. Like,
yeah.
It just came as part of the, like, sweetener deal.
Yeah,
and we got,
like your free iPad thing. Now.
Yeah, yeah, that sort of thing. And so we had a VCR, and this is the first time we had a VCR as well. So that was very exciting.
Yeah.
But what we discovered, like, I thought that computers were just for boring stuff like typing.
Yeah, spreadsheets.
Because that's what, well, back then it was...
Yeah, not even.
It was basically Dad liked gadgets, and he liked...
Mm-hmm.
faffing about with programming and stuff.
Great.
And BASIC, and so he would write little BASIC programs and he would make it look really uninteresting. In fact, probably the most, and I was like, why, what?
And later you found out that it was actually really fun.
Yes. He used to get these really boring magazines in the mail called like PC User Magazine or something like that.
Yeah.
And it was just like, ugh, boring.
Dire.
So, anyway, one day he brought home a disc, and he put a... He said, I've got some games.
We're talking, what, a floppy? Like, what size?
Like an actual floppy
like,
disc. Like, one that you could, like,
one
fan
of the,
yourself
yeah, fat, yeah,
with.
One of the big... What, yeah.
Like,
I don't know,
8¾ inches.
Yeah, that seems about right.
Yeah,
yeah,
or something like that. Really big one. You can flap it about.
Yeah, and you can see the kind of film.
Yeah, and you could, like, stick your finger in it and
whirl
roll
around.
It around.
Yeah,
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 yeah. It was pretty
only
cool.
You were really not meant to.
No, you weren't.
Yeah,
of course
no.
not.
I did,
don't touch
course,
don't touch
bad.
It. Well, we were also, like, what, 4 or 5 years old?
Yeah, so how do we know?
But anyway, one of the first games that I played on that was a game called Castle Adventure.
I also played Castle Adventure, but not in a home context. So this was a little bit later than 84, 85, but my father had a job for a while in a place that allowed him to bring his child in.
Pretty,
you know,
that's pretty...
It was actually quite enlightened
yeah,
in many ways.
Yeah, progressive, especially for the 80s.
Yes. So, but basically, he was doing videography and editing and some cinematography work, and there was a computer in this place where he was working on, you know, this enormous, very complicated editing stuff. And so I had this to entertain myself with, and I thought, well, what have we got? And there was Castle Adventure, which I forgot for ages what it was called, but, you know, this black background and you start in a courtyard and you have to kind of move around and every object or thing or idea that you come across is represented by, you know, text characters, white, whitish grey.
It was the precursor to kind of things like NetHack and those other dungeon crawling adventures sort of series. Even Adventure, which I suspect actually Castle Adventure was a bit of a rip-off of Adventure.
Oh, yeah.
Which was another one that was, I think, for one of the Ataris or something like that. We never had an Atari. We weren't allowed consoles because video games were bad.
Yes.
Except if they were on the computer.
I agree. It was sort of the computer kind of legitimated playing video games as a reasonable hobby.
Yeah, because
for
we also got some educational games.
Oh yes,
at
we did too.
Point. So I got Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego.
We had that too. Absolutely.
And did you have your World Almanac and Book of Facts?
I think we did.
Yeah, the big,
I don't know,
the
I don't
red
remember
book
what happened
that was
to that.
About I don't know like 4 or 5 inches
ridiculous.
Thick or something.
Ridiculous. Yeah, we had
and,
where.
It was always bent
typing
open.
Program.
Oh, Mavis Beacon
teaches typing.
Yes.
That was horrendous.
So we didn't get that until I was much older.
Yeah, that was later.
Yeah.
Mavis Beacon was later.
But we also had, I also had a game called Alpine Tram Ride, which...
That sounds like way more fun.
This was 1989, so this is a bit later, and it actually had proper, like, colour kind of graphics.
Mm.
They were pretty blocky, but... You had to. It was like Mastermind, so you had to put the right coloured right animals in the right slots,
yes.
And you had sort of had to work out from your failures, what order the animals
to progress.
Were.
Yeah.
So it was a very basic game, but so that we played that. We also had a BBC Micro B thing, whatever it was called, at my kindergarten.
Ooh.
And my dad came down to teach the teachers how to use it because he was apparently one of the few people that knew how to
figure
use
it out.
These things. This is what, 85?
Mm.
And I remember this is my very first ever programming that I ever did, was to, he basically got us using it by programming things in it. This is a bit of a story that he tells, so I don't actually know how true it is, but apparently, my 5-year-old memory is not great,
yeah.
But apparently managed to get a sprite moving up and down the screen, but only half of it moved.
Oh.
Because that's how great a programmer I was at age 5.
Yeah,
but it was one of those classic ones where you had to, like, type in all of the characters.
Yeah.
Like, but, of course, at age 5, I was barely writing my own... Actually, I could write my own name by then because I was
I bet you could.
Yeah, I was a bit of
pretty
a...
Pretty sure I could too, so...
Yes,
yeah,
so I was writing stuff in preschool, so...
Yeah.
But anyway, so...
Oh, we were not
typing,
fun kids.
Yeah, we
were the kind of kids where they were like, oh, man.
What do we do with these?
Yeah.
Like, they're just too advanced for this stuff.
Well,
that was us.
Bored.
Nerds. Anyway, so we played, but there were other games that we played. If we finished all our work, we were allowed to, quote, play on the computer, unquote, which became a slogan used in my house as well for what you did on a computer. You
yes.
played on it.
Yes.
And so we played a game called Granny's Garden, which is... 1983.
Yeah, I don't know this game.
And it was, let me just go over to my Wikipedia page that tells me about it. It was an educational adventure game for the British BBC microcomputer.
Whoa.
It was the first introduction to computers for many school children during the United Kingdom and Australia, I'm going to put in, because it was ours as well.
Because, yeah.
And it was the reason that many teachers had decided that computers had a real place in education. Of course, it doesn't actually really tell you much. It's, you've got to find the 6 missing children of the king and queen while avoiding the evil witch, because, of course, all...
Right.
All
I mean,
women,
in the mystical kingdom of the mountains.
The mystical kingdom of the
I'm
mountains.
I'm sure there are many witches.
And you have to solve puzzles. So, I mean, it was a fairly basic kind of puzzle-solving game, and it was mostly text-based, if I recall correctly. I don't really remember a lot about it, but we were allowed to play that game. And then, at home, though back at home, I couldn't remember any of the other stuff we did on the computer at school, to be honest. I just remember playing Granny's Garden and apparently my ill-fated programming exercise.
You're surprised.
Did you play on computers, quote-unquote, at school?
Right, yes and no. So, I was mainly homeschooled until my parents divorced. And so there was, you know, Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego? Then later on there was Mavis Beacon Teaches Typing. We had one computer, and I can't actually remember our first household computer that I didn't sort of get my grubby mitts on during when my dad was working on something or whatever. Was I think it was an Apple.
Mm.
Might have been a 2E.
Ooh.
Yeah, maybe late. Yeah, I can't actually remember this for sure. I wish I...
Did you have Prince of Persia?
I did have Prince of Persia.
Because that was the best game.
I don't remember
it was
it
only
all.
On Apple.
Yeah,
I don't remember it.
I
was so jealous because
I
had that at school.
No particular affinity for it.
I was really bad at it. Like, I mean, I still am really bad at platform games.
I have never been good at platform games.
Yeah.
I am still really crap at them. Even really beautiful ones that I think, I'm going to buy this game because it looks awesome.
Yeah.
It's pointless.
No, all the Mario games, I'm like, these are amazing and I love Mario, but I am so shit at these games.
Yeah.
Metroid as well.
Yeah.
Although I did play Metroid Prime somehow, and I played the Prince of Persia that came out on the PS2.
Right.
In fact, I bought a PS2 just to play that Prince of Persia game. And it was actually really funny because my boyfriend at the time, he was really into it. And so he was mostly playing, and because we went away for the weekend, and we basically played that whole weekend, because that's what you do on a romantic weekend.
Yes, that's what I do on a romantic weekend.
Play video games.
So this weekend, what are we going to do? We're going to play the new Divinity
Original
Sin.
We went out to the country. We could have gone out into like nature and stuff, but we sat inside and played video games. I think it was winter, so it was okay.
Yeah.
But he couldn't do some of it, and I was like, eh, let me have a go.
Yes.
So we just had a slight technical malfunction, but
yeah.
I was talking about Prince of Persia. So we were playing Prince of Persia, and he couldn't quite get to some of it.
Yeah.
And but I was really good at doing some of the jumping puzzles.
And you showed him.
I know.
Excellent.
Apparently 3D, I'm all right. Anyway, so Prince of Persia, yes, on the Apple. So you didn't have that.
I don't remember it.
You don't remember it. So what do you remember any games now?
So I remember, it's really interesting because we didn't have a computer for the home until quite late-ish. The games I do remember, it's really interesting. So I was thinking about the things that I remember. So there's Monkey Island, it's about 1990. I did play stuff that was made slightly earlier than that, Might and Magic 2.
Might and Magic.
But yeah, I know, right? Great, really fun. Heroes of Might and Magic is fun.
Heroes of Might and Magic. So that didn't come till later, I think.
That was the first game I dreamed in, one of the Might and Magic games.
Yeah.
Like, I literally dreamed about being, seeing, because it was first person.
Yeah.
But most of the games that I remember really investing myself in, as it were, and kind of taking up and playing seriously. So there was Doom. There was Myst.
Oh, Myst.
Yeah. And talk about a wake-up call. Myst was one of those things where they were like, we're just going to drop you into this thing.
And that was one that was only available for a Mac as well for a while. And I was really annoyed because we got to have time on the Macs at school,
mm-hmm.
but because you need a lot of time to play Myst.
You do. Because it's all about exploration. There's puzzles, but there's no obvious enemies. There's no obvious spinning fiery turret that you need to negotiate.
And also, back then, it was really hard to get a walkthrough.
Yes.
Because there was no internet. If you were stuck on a puzzle,
you just need to come back to
it. Or you needed to talk to other people.
Other
but
players,
then, of course,
yeah.
nobody
Did
played,
you know anybody? No.
Nobody played games back
no,
then.
No. And especially, so, it was a bit of an... We'll talk about there's Doom, which is, Doom, Myst, Sign of the Sorcerer, and King's Quest VI were the games. And I was thinking about the dates of these because, archaeological training. And I was like, they're all clustered around 92, 93, 94. And that was when I really started playing computer games seriously. So I have this affection for the first games that I was serious about, and it wasn't just sort of like, oh, well, yeah, I'll play Soul Blade or whatever it was in the arcade. This is when my parents divorced.
Mm.
So I think it was actually really helpful for me to have something to do with my brain and, myself. Some characters to follow, some stories, some puzzles, some exploration.
And some distraction, I'm sure.
Yeah, exactly. Definitely a coping mechanism. And especially since... So I have a sibling, I have a sister, but she and I really didn't spend any time hanging out. We didn't kind of have the same friends or go to the same parties or anything like that. In fact, I didn't really do parties until... my PhD, it wasn't something that anyone else around me was doing, so it was mine, and it was something that I could do and feel like I was accomplishing something.
Yeah, I think a lot of the stuff when I go to PAX and stuff, I talk a lot to people who have similar experiences with games, in that they see games as a way to not just kind of distract themselves from their real life, but also to give them a sense of meaning and purpose.
Yes.
Yeah. And it's also, especially if there's not so great things going on in their lives, it can be really helpful as a kind of a almost like a therapeutic thing to be able to have a space that you can go into and feel like you've actually got control
and
of
it is
what's
a space.
Happening.
It definitely is, you know, and it exists in your mind, and it's a very, you know, it's quite comforting to see those.
Yeah.
You know,
and
I still remember sort of the Sierra logo coming up before King Quest VI and thinking, you know, it's okay, everything is going to be okay because I'm going to
sit down and immerse myself in this game.
Yes.
And it's interesting because you look back on these older games and they're not great graphically.
No.
So some of the stories are pretty naff.
Yeah,
some of the characters are pretty stereotypey.
Yeah, there's some really awful racist, sexist, unacceptable.
Yeah, I mean, it's not great.
No.
But, I mean, you see games these days that try to emulate the feel of those games.
Mm.
And there's something about the style of those games that's kind of timeless, I think.
I agree.
I mean, you're going to get, like, future. You're going to always have 3D games and 3D kind of experiences, but you're not going to get people who want to recreate the experience of Call of Duty 2.
No,
but they might want to.
But
they might want to they might want to recreate the experience of, say, Monkey Island 2, or something like that, right? And I mean, so those sorts of games are kind of timeless, and a lot of that is because that, I mean, obviously they were coming out with the new types of mechanics and things like that.
Sure.
But a lot of the and they're experimenting with things like inventories and how do you manipulate items in games and how do you have a conversation in a game, which is actually quite a complicated thing because you've only got a certain amount of screen. If you want to have a conversation, especially in a medium where you don't have voice record, like
so
you can't really do voice stuff
the sort of click triggered things like in Simon the Sorcerer.
Yeah, because you want to keep, because you need to keep, like, sound takes up loads of space, and that's why, I mean, things like chiptunes are so popular, because you can just basically write a program that then creates
that
sound.
Yeah.
But if you want to do, like, full-on voice audio stuff, conversations, that takes up loads of space, because you've got to put an MP3 on, which didn't even exist back then. So, I mean, the fact that they did a lot with very little, I think, is really cool, and people want to recreate that experience, I think.
I think that's true in a narrative sense as well as in a technical sense, because even in something like Castle Adventure, there is
a
description, there is a story, there is a narrative, and it takes...
It's very badly spelled.
Of course.
I remember there was corridors with an extra O in it, and it used to really bug me.
But I mean, regardless, I mean, yeah, I find typos even in games with a huge amount of attention to detail, like ESO. And every time I find a typo in ESO, I'm like, oh, you guys.
You had one job.
Yeah, you had one job. But no, I mean, and there's bazillions of bits of lore and things like that in ESO, so it's not all that frequent that I find something, but there is a craft to producing a narrative with a minimal amount of sort of text and sort of junk to make it interesting, but also engaging, and also not so much that nobody will bother to read it.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, actually, some of these things, and often, I mean, I don't know about you, but so my sister and I, we used to play games together. So we had a Space Invaders competition going. We used to see who could get the top score. She was much better at it than I was, and she was really fiercely competitive, and she was always trying to outdo me in these sorts of things.
Right.
And so
you're
the
eldest, right?
Of course, yeah. So she was fiercely competitive about this, and we used to spend whole weekends just trying to outdo each other in Space Invaders. It was some weird Space Invaders clone, I've decided. I can't find it on any site. But then, when we played, there was a game that was similar to the Simon the Sorcerer style, so that adventure game, called, it was The Legend of Kyrandia.
I have never heard of that.
So it was in a similar sort of vein.
Okay.
We didn't play 1 and 2, we played episode 3, Malcolm's Revenge. So apparently in episodes 1 and 2, they set this guy Malcolm up. Apparently he's good for a bit, and then he turns bad, and then he turns really, he's like a, I don't know, he's like a... the jester,
like
I think he's like the court jester or something.
Okay.
And anyway, so he's a bit of a fallen hero, but in the third one, I don't even remember what you have to do, to be perfectly honest, but basically you had to go and, I think, stop him from, you know, you are him, and you're trying to get revenge on the previous game. So it was a bit of a, apparently it turned things on its head a little bit,
right?
It wasn't a great game. I have looked it up and it didn't score. It hasn't scored very well in terms of reviews. But and mostly because some of the mechanics were rubbish. Like, there was a bit where you had to take a machete and chop through, like, bamboo or something. Mm-hmm. And there was a randomly generated maze that you had to basically get through. And you had to go forward and back through this area, like, I don't know how many times. Because, you know, it's an adventure game, so you got to go to one place and you got to pick up the cog. And then you got
to,
you know,
have to go all the way back.
And you have to try doing this with that, you know, that sort of stuff, right? And it was rubbish because you got stuck in this freaking maze every single time, and because it was randomly generated, it's not like you could just learn a path and go through.
No,
so it was awful. But anyway,
there was something like that in one of the Zorks, wasn't there?
Yeah, there was one of those. In the
Zorks. Eaten by so many grues.
Yeah, I remember Zork 2. Was that the one with the pretty pictures? Which
maybe.
Was all with the pretty pictures? Zork.
The only
Legend Return to Zork.
Maybe it was Return to Zork.
Yeah. Anyway, so Malcolm's Revenge.
So soap.
My sister and
I. Took me so long to figure out how to wash my hands. I can't even tell you.
Yes, I remember. What was the one with the guy that said, "Want some rye? Course you do."
I think that was Return.
That was Return to Zork.
Yeah,
because I remember that.
And
it took me ages,
like,
to work out. You had to tip it in the pot plant.
Yes, and you're like, oh. Okay.
But anyway, so my sister and I used to play this game.
Oh, yes.
And we would try to solve the puzzles together because, I mean, supposedly a single-player game, but we play it together because we were rubbish at puzzles, apparently, because in these adventure games, you basically need to be in the person's head that devised them, which is impossible. And this is before the internet, so this is probably early 90s, like 94 this game came out. I don't even know how we got it. I think it came on a disc with a bunch of stuff that my dad got, probably from one of his PC user magazines.
One of these promotional things,
Anyway, but we played the crap out of that game, and we managed to finish it. We got to a certain point and we got stuck, so we didn't manage to finish it. And then I think it was when we finally got the internet, which was probably in about 1996 or 97.
Did you go back to it?
We went and found a walkthrough just so we could finish the game, and we played all the way through it together and finished the game. And it was such a lovely, because it had been a part of our lives. And we were so mad about, because we tried everything, like, you know, you try everything, right? And it was something really ridiculous that you had to do, and I can't remember what it was, but just feeling that accomplishment with my sister was really, really nice.
There was one thing that I did play with my sister. We had a babysitter, I don't remember terribly well, but I do remember that they had a gaming system on which we could play Super Mario Brothers.
Ah.
So that was
an NES. So.
Yeah, probably the only thing I played with my sister. And it was nice because it was sort of two-player. And she was, like, nobody wanted to be Luigi. Everyone always wanted to be Mario. Because,
of course, Mario is the best. It's the
Super
Mario Brothers,
not
the Super
Luigi
Brothers. Not
the Super
Luigi
Brothers, yeah, exactly. We did play that together. She was better at it than I was, but, you know.
Yeah, it's good fun, isn't it? And you take turns as well, and, you know, when someone dies, that's their job, that's their turn done, and then you get to
No, so she got more turns than I did, but, you know, that's all right.
Yeah.
I don't hold a grudge.
Not much. So another thing that we also did was there used to be these demos that you'd get on discs that come with the PC User magazine, or whatever magazine that you particularly like, and I remember there was this one disc that we got. So we used to, like, every time these magazines came monthly, and we used to basically try to get to it before Dad would, because if they had games on it, he would hide the disc because he didn't want us playing the video game. And I think this is actually around the time that he got his first Pentium 90, which probably also cost around a ridiculous amount of money, because it was I ended up using that for my, like, HSC, which is like the leaving certificate, you know, university entrance stuff. That was my main PC. Anyway, and we but we managed to get our hands on one of the demos, and there was a demo for Star Wars Rebel Assault, which was basically, the demo was, you were in this X-Wing, I think, and you were trying to take down a starship, and you had to fly around, and you had to shoot, it was a rails shooter, basically.
Right, okay.
And you had to shoot out the turret guns.
Mm.
And I was really bad at it. Really, really bad at it. And then
did you enjoy it?
Oh, I loved it. We played. I mean, it was probably, what, maybe a 10-15 minute demo.
Yeah.
That was all you could do, was just fly around this one starship and blow out its turrets, and that's all you could do. And then the game, I don't know, finished.
And that was it, yeah.
There was another. Oh, we just played the hell out of it. I just love the music because I love Star Wars. I thought was just. I really love Star Wars, and I could just listen to the music all day, and I would play the game all day. It was fabulous. And there was another demo that we had, which I can't remember the name of, and my searching was futile.
Oh dear.
But it was basically you run around. It was another spaceship flying kind of game.
Yeah,
and
kind
you,
of a semi.
Sort of, but you were behind. It was a third person flying game. And you skimmed over the top of this planet.
Yeah.
And basically that you shot at enemies. And but the demo was kind of unending, so you could fly forever.
Oh, cool.
And so we just flew, and like we went set off in a direction, and we just fly and fly and fly. And eventually I suspect we triggered some sort of memory bug. And it popped us out into like this like nether zone, or we used to call it the nether zone.
The nether.
Yeah, and it was cool. But that was just the demo as well. Yeah.
So the other one I wanted to mention just in terms of flying around was Descent.
Yeah.
So that's also kind of like mid-90s. It's
vaguely
technically a third-person shooter, but I remember kind of being in a ship, and maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it was... No, yeah, there it is.
She's looking this up.
But yes, I'm looking this up.
I've triggered a memory.
Yeah, you have, exactly. So, yeah, the game requires the player to navigate labyrinthine mines while fighting a virus and fighting virus-infected robots.
Oh, that sounds pretty cool.
Yeah.
I remember that one.
And you basically destroy robots and...
Stupid robots.
So you have a flight model, and it's a 6 degrees of freedom model.
Nice.
So it's fully 3D thing, and I remember just getting absolutely confused as heck trying to kind of orient myself in the game space. But it was, you know, learning how to do kind of banking and things like this.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was definitely one of those games that I think my stepfather gave him motion sickness or something like that. but yeah, it was definitely
a fun
game. It's sort of just the memory of kind of flying around made me just triggered and kind of like, oh yeah, there was another game that wasn't, you weren't really flying, but yeah, felt like it with this movement system.
So I think, I mean, these sorts of games, it's nice to have these like nostalgic memories, and it really helps you kind of think. I mean, for me, it's about competition with my sister, playing with my sister, but then also some, like, I mean, I learned that World Almanac and Book of Facts. I just sat down and I would
Book
read that. I would actually just read it, and I learned all of the flags and all of the capital cities, and then I was that jerk who used to run around going, did you know that X and Y is the capital of that? Huh? And the flag looks like this? That was me. I mean, I was that little kid that, I mean, I must have been so annoying.
Yeah.
Sorry, Mom.
I was probably pretty obnoxious too. Yeah, sorry, family
Mom
members who might be listening.
But, you know, it all worked out in the end because we became academics. So I guess there's a natural...
So now we get paid to be obnoxious.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, we do.
But it's a nostalgia thing, isn't it? And it
definitely is. And for me, it is sort of... It was very interesting to reflect in advance of this on how... Playing computer games was sort of, I guess, a safe space for me fairly early on in my life, which I hadn't really reflected on that.
Yeah, well, it's nice that it was there for you, I think.
It was, yeah, and I'm grateful.
Yeah.
It's a weird thing to say, but I really am.
Yeah. No, I mean, I've had sort of situations later in life where games have been a nice place to kind of unwind, so I can definitely feel... The ability to get away from all of the stuff that's on you at the moment is actually really important.
And if you're worrying about shooting robots, then, I mean, actually, you know, it's...
They probably deserved it, it's alright.
Well, no, you kind of feel bad for them because they're only acting that way because they have a virus.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Virus.
Oh,
that's sad.
It is sad. But then you think about, are we kind of imbuing these things with agency and they shouldn't have it? Or, so many questions.
This is, I think,
another time.
Another time.
Yeah.
You've been listening to the Not Just a Game podcast. The music is Hot Machine Cold Surface by Ben Prunty from OC Remix. Graphics are from The Noun Project.